Ring, ring, there's the call. That app that they need on a shorter timeline and a smaller budget than you would ever have imagined. That's exactly the call that this team got. They came out ahead, but how did they do it? Exactly like you would. Come be inspired by what they've accomplished on this episode of Dev Radio. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm here with Brian Roccapriori. He's the data director at CCEH. Now, Brian, thanks for being on the show. I'm pretty excited what we're going to talk about, but before we get into it, tell me a little bit about who you are, Brian.
Yeah, sure. Well, first, thanks for having us on here today. I really appreciate it. My name is Brian Roccapriori. My official job title is Director of the Homeless Management Information System and Strategic Analysis, and I work at the Connecticut Coalition on Homelessness. So I have the lovely longest name and job title, I think, in the history of our organization. But what I do here is I run what we call HMIS, the Homeless Management Information System, which is our statewide database that helps us really analyze how we're doing on homelessness in the state, and not just like how many there are, but what we're doing and how it's working to actually end homelessness in the state of Connecticut. We're have the distinction of being one of the first states to end veteran homelessness. We just matched all of the folks who are experiencing chronic homelessness in the state to a housing resource. And now we're working on family and youth homelessness here in the state. So there's a lot of exciting stuff going on. And we do that in partnership with our system administrator, Nutmeg Consulting, which is who Adam works for.
Okay, well, I want to talk to Adam here in just a second, but I want to get a bigger feel for this. So specifically, is homelessness an industry? What industry are you in?
I guess I would be in the industry of homelessness. I don't know what other one would be the right name for it. The Connecticut Coalition on Homelessness, we're a membership organization. One of the things we happen to do is run the HMIS platform. So we also do statewide advocacy because we try to organize all the groups in the state so we can have one unified message when we're going and talking about resources. One unified way of doing things in the state and really kind of all learn from each other. So when it comes time to advocate for resources, there's not 100 different messages going up into the state capitol at one time. Yeah. There's one unified message coming from 100 different voices coming at one time. And we've been very successful
which is way more
as the industry
powerful,
doing
right?
that. I'm sorry, say that again?
No, which is way more powerful to have so many voices speaking the same message at the same time. I'm sure it's very rewarding to be part of something that's making a serious difference. I can hear that you've already made these differences. So this isn't new, right? So this has been around for a little while?
It's been around for a little while. Recently, the way that we've done things in the state as far as the homelessness sector goes is going to sound a little silly, but we actually all talk to each other now, which wasn't always the case. Previously, organizations were somewhat incentivized to work in their own little silos. And in the past couple of years, we have, as a state, have been really working collaboratively amongst all the providers to really work towards an end and not just the goals of our one particular organization. And that has come through in major ways in the city. We've been making great strides in ending homelessness here.
If I were to step back a little bit and look for the Brian Roccapriori in other states, would I find them, or is this unique to where you are?
There is one of me in every state out there. So I don't have a counterpart here in Connecticut. So when I do have questions, I have to go into other states to figure out like what they're doing and how they're doing it. Because there is, unfortunately, only one of me, or fortunately, depending who you talk to, but there is only one of me in the state of Connecticut.
Okay, so thank you, Brian. We also have we have Adam Yarnot. He's a lead developer there in Hartford as well. Adam, hey, thanks for being on the show, man.
No problem. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell me your relationship here. It sounds like you work with Brian, but you're not working for the same organization?
Correct. I work for Nutmeg Consulting. We do IT work for nonprofits and other companies in Connecticut and Massachusetts. And CCH is one of our clients that we work with.
Now, working for nonprofits are a unique nut to crack, aren't they? It's not like working for a regular company that's not mission-driven. There's something special about working for mission-driven companies, don't you feel?
There is, that's true. They do have a unique set of challenges with funding issues that kind of vary from year to year, and a lot of other issues that are somewhat unique to nonprofits.
Yeah, I feel like often they have the biggest mission, you know, or the biggest vision. You know, you start talking about what you might be able to do, and you're always talking down other companies. You know, you're like, well, let's bring in the scope a little bit, but you never want to bring down the scope of these nonprofits because they're helping so many people. And then you're like, oh my gosh, how are we going to do all this in this tiny little budget that you have? Yeah, it's
very
such
true. They have very important work to do, so you never want to, you never feel like you want to narrow that at all. So,
so you're a developer. What kind of technologies?
Mostly my experience is with .NET framework, so it's mostly C# web applications, desktop apps, some mobile going back into the Windows CE and Windows Mobile days.
Okay. I definitely know those technologies myself. Heard of them once, right?
Yes.
No doubt. Now, my favorite evangelist in the whole wide world is on the call, which we're so lucky to have Nick Landry yet again on Dev Radio. This is going to be one of those shows that goes down in the books. Nick, thanks for being on the show again, man.
It's always a pleasure, Jerry. Always good to record another one of these with you.
Now, you're down in your bunker, I can tell, and you are still in New York, still an evangelist, still talking mobile, still talking .NET, still the same Nick Landry that we all know and love.
Yeah, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I guess it's still the same. Always picking up new skills, new areas of development. Of course, this project was more of a going back to one of my initial loves, basically going back 15 years in mobility. Now, of course, was all about Xamarin, as we'll be talking about. But yeah, I'm technically in Jersey, by the way, part of the New York team, but my bunker is in Jersey. So,
got it. Well, I was saying New York so nobody could actually find you, but now they know.
Well, there's a lot of people in Jersey. That's the thing. So it's we're the most densely populated state, if you can believe that.
I can believe it. Thanks, Nick. Now, Omar Kawatli, I'm glad to have you on the call, too, because you can give us a little bit of texture around it. You're a practice manager there with Microsoft Premier, and I imagine a lot of people listening, they won't even know. They'll know what a practice manager is, but they've never heard of Microsoft Premier before and how important it is to us as a company. Could you kind of describe Microsoft Premier, and then I want to talk to you about who you are.
Sure, Jerry. Hey, nice to be here and good to have a chance to speak with everybody. Yeah, so Microsoft Premier is really the highest level of support and consulting that Microsoft provides our customers. And you can think of when people think of Premier, they may be thinking of IT support, you know, people that come in and help with the infrastructure and data center. But we also have a portion of Premier we call Premier Developer. And that's the practice that I'm responsible for here in the Northeast and New York, New Jersey area. And Premier Developer in particular brings that level of support and consulting to software developers in companies ranging of all sizes. We have all of the different ISVs here in the Northeast and New York that are building software, either financial services or healthcare. And then we have all the big companies in the Northeast and New Jersey and New York. You can imagine, you know, pick all your Fortune 500s. They have a lot of headquarters in New York and in the Boston area. And so we really help them make sure they're getting the most out of their developers. You know, Satya Nadella recently mentioned, you know, every company needs to be a software company if they want to be successful in this new digital economy. And so Premier Developer is really the, you know, relationship service with Microsoft that if you want your company to be, you know, really cutting edge in this digital economy, that kind of relationship with Microsoft is really key. And that's what my team does.
Okay, your team makes plenty of sense to me. When my mom calls and tells me that Excel won't print, she calls for support and she does not get your team.
That's right. But if your mom was a software developer at let's say one of the big insurance companies, she sure could give us a call and that's where we'd be able to help them out. Figure out how to migrate that application to Azure, for example.
Right. Well, Omar, let's just be honest. When she calls for support, it's my phone number.
I have a mom just like that, too.
Oh, isn't it the truth? Oh, Excel won't print. Really? Here we go. Okay. So usually it's Microsoft won't print. I'm like, well, we have to dial it down a little bit, but it's terrific. Okay. Omar, you're out there on the East Coast as well. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Sure. Well, I'm a Microsoft longtime employee. I've actually coming up on 20 years with the company in this year. But I'd say most importantly, I'm a husband and a dad. I've got four boys that I'm super proud of. And so that's, you know, for me, that's who I am. I think one of the things, and kind of related to my family, we've been supporters, and really Microsoft has enabled this because they double all of our donations. So all employees at Microsoft, we're really into giving. And we have a big giving campaign every year. And so my wife and I said, we want to give locally more. And so I went to the Microsoft database of all the different charities that were in Connecticut, and this thing I've never heard of called Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness popped up on Microsoft's dashboard there. Yeah. And I said, well, what do you think of this? That sounds interesting. So we started to donate, and a couple years went by. And we really, you know, were following what they were doing. And my wife and I reached out to them and said, you know, we've been donating for a couple of years. Is there more we could do for you? And that's when I started to begin more of a deeper relationship with the company. And I learned kind of what they do that I think is so special is, you know, in the high tech space, we know all about venture capitalists, right? You know, and so a good VC doesn't just come in with money. They come in with expertise. They help you be, as a startup, be successful. I look at CCEH as doing that for the nonprofit homelessness business. They they work with, you know, dozens, or, you know, really 40, 50 or so different partner organizations across the state. And they come in and they say, you know, what you're doing in Bridgeport is amazing. We want to take that to New Haven or to Fairfield. And they make those connections, and they bring that expertise, but then, and then they also bring in the amazing data perspective that begins to allow them to communicate the success that they're having. And so, you know, couldn't be more proud of the organization being able to literally end veteran homelessness, and now just ending chronic homelessness. So it really makes you think that it's not just a dream to end homelessness. It's just it's a journey that we're on that's really happening.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not just something for like beauty pageants, right? Where you're like, oh, well, someday we'll end homelessness. It can actually be done if you're smart enough to think about it.
It's a data problem. It's not a resourcing issue. Sure, resources are tough, but in the end, it's really boils down to, do we know enough about the problems, and can we communicate what the problems are? Is that there is enough out there to solve it, and we're proving that, you know, year after year here in Connecticut, which is very cool.
Now, Brian, let's step back. So I've got a feel for what's going on, but all of a sudden the federal government steps in and they've got some ideas of their own. It was sort of the impetus to this project. Give us the high level. What's going on here? What did we do?
Sure. So every year the federal government mandates something called the point in time count. And what that is, it's an annual census of everybody who's experiencing homelessness in the United States on one night. And they mandate that happens, as I think we talked about earlier, in the last 10 days of January. Mm-hmm. So in Connecticut, that was, I think, January 24th or 25th this year. So what we do is we split the state up into a bunch of different regions, and we have hundreds of volunteers go out there one night, go out and just count everybody who is sleeping outside or in a car or wherever that case might be, so we can really get that overall state feel for how many people are experiencing homelessness in the state.
How do you do this? Is this just a manpower solution?
So for this one, yes. We've been doing it for almost 20 years now, so we've kind of got this one down. And we're pretty good at it. The outreach teams in the state have a real good feel for where everybody is outside. We work with local police departments, local parks departments, local like basic needs departments to help really, really make sure that we capture everybody out there who's experiencing homelessness, which works very, very well for the adult population. But it doesn't work so well for those who are under the age of 25, specifically those who are under the age of 18, the runaway and homeless youth population, which we know exists. Yeah. But an example of how bad the point in time count really is at capturing that, I think 2 years ago, I think we had 5 unaccompanied youth accounted for in the point in time count. And if you go out and you said that to any of the youth providers in the state, they would just laugh at you because they saw more youth than that in the past week than we saw in that night in the point in time count. So you were alluding to it before with nonprofits and resources. We all have very fancy job titles, but at the end of the day, I still take the trash out here. And when I saw that Omar was coming on our board of directors talking about like what other resources they have to bear, when we started this conversation about what we could do together, the idea came up to have the youth count built into a mobile application, which helped us go off and not just count better, but it helped in so many other ways, because the youth are more responsive to technology than they are with somebody walking out with a clipboard. They feel safer about their privacy when they're entering it into a mobile application, because they know it just goes away and nobody else can see it. And there's a number of other things. Like, it gave us the exact location where all the surveys were being conducted, which didn't rely on somebody outside when it's 20 degrees out and me trying to decipher their handwriting. So it was a really great thing that came together.
So from a technology point of view, then, Adam, what did you start to see? What made up a project like this?
Well, it had a lot of different aspects to it. I had some history with this because I had developed a web application that was used to collect a lot of the former paper surveys, and also to collect the bed counts, the people counts for the that part of the data collection as well. So when they approached us about doing the mobile application, we wanted to kind of take some of what we had already learned from the previous survey work and apply that to a mobile application, so you could kind of combine everything and do it all at once out in the field, rather than having to, you know, re-enter paper data after, and, as you said, try and interpret freezing handwriting. So
yeah.
So we met on that, and I know Nick's going to talk a little bit about this, but they had some technology suggestions for using the Xamarin. I had some experience previously with Windows Mobile stuff, so we were able to kind of combine forces there, basically. I had previously done work on the backend database for, you know, processing and storing all this information previously, so we were able to translate that over into a similar framework to use to connect to the mobile application and keep everything as consistent as possible. So it'd be easier to sift through the data afterwards and not have to translate too much.
Okay, I'm starting to get the picture about what the solution is going to look like. But Brian, I have this question that I can't get over. What's so difficult about measuring youth? Why is that harder? Is it not just a matter of walking around saying 1, 2, 3, 4, or is there more to it than that?
There's unfortunately a lot more to it than that, because walking down the street, homeless youth do a very good job of just blending in with their peers because they don't want to be identified as someone who's homeless or experiencing housing instability. They are a population that's much less likely to use the resources that are out there, accessing emergency shelters, for example. Many won't take anybody who's under the age of 18. So you're going to have a lot more people that are off couch surfing or staying at their friend's house or their boyfriend, girlfriend's house, or they're double tripled up somewhere. So they're not the stereotypical thing of homelessness when you think about it. The guy with like four coats on living under a bridge, they're really an invisible population that's out there. So trying to get a good count of that is extremely, extremely difficult. And specifically with the way that we do it with the point in time count, That's one night. You're never going to go out and capture everybody who's couch surfing and double tripled up in a one night count. So we did this effort over the course of a full week, so we could really like go in and help use youth specifically to go out and find their peers who are experiencing housing instability. Because if you find one, they might be able to go off and talk to their friends who are in the same or similar situation and get them to come take a survey too. Because ultimately, this is all going to help us advocate for more resources to help solving this problem. But the first step to solving the problem is figuring out how big that problem is. Because right now, we just don't know how big that problem is.
Sure, sure. So, Omar, you sit down with Brian. He's describing all of this. It's a half of it's inspirational, half of it's terrifying. How do you, what did you see with technology? What was the new vision with technology to solve some of these problems?
Yeah, well, what was interesting is initially, I think when we very first started this conversation, they were looking to do this in June of this year. And then all of a sudden, the federal government said, no, you need to do this at the same time as your January count. So we got serious really fast. And we put together a project plan. we said, okay, this is something where we have to be able to deliver something quickly. And the good thing is, you know, this is where Microsoft helps our customers do more. And so I think we were able to really take advantage and demonstrate that these technologies could meet a tight deadline. And that was one of the challenges. And I think the other was this was not budgeted for at CCEA. Mm. So on the, you know, as one of the directors on the board, we review the budget, you know, every meeting. And it was clear that if they were going to do something to try to move the needle on youth homelessness, they'd need some help. And so this is where I had a knowledge of our developer experience group, DX group, that provides this kind of developer evangelism. And through that process, I got connected with Nick. And there's a special, really a grant that Microsoft made available to Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness that allowed us to get talented people like Nick. And then, you know, really, I must give kudos to Nutmeg Consulting as well. Their CEO, you know, really allocated Adam's time as a gift for CCEH. So there's a lot of good gifting going on, you know, with the coalition providing Brian's time and Microsoft providing Nick. And I think Nick will talk more about the whole team that we had really behind him. But it was quite an intense effort because we knew there was a deadline that would not shift.
Sure. Nick, this isn't the first project to have a schedule change, not the first project to have a budget constraint as well. That we come to you and we're like, let's talk about some of the technologies we can start introducing. How did that influence your architectural influence over the project?
Well, I mean, first there was a project management issue. I mean, by the time that I met with Omar, we already had the new deadline for that point. So things did not, I was not involved like, with the original date of June. It was basically more like whenever it was January, that's when Omar came to me. And as you and I know, we're evangelists.
You got the crisis.
Yeah, I got the crisis, exactly. And you and I are evangelists. And a lot of people think that evangelism is like, hey, you show up at a conference, you do your fancy speech with your fancy demos, and then you walk out. And you bye-bye now, okay? So no, actually, true evangelism is more like following up with your customers and sitting down with them to make sure that, hey, this new technology I told you about, let's sit down. Let's make sure you can get started properly. And that's something that we do. So that's when Omar came and we decided, let's get a team together. So having worked for many years in mobility and with Xamarin, then it was clear that because this is the classic bring your own device scenario where CCH doesn't use employees, they use volunteers. So all the volunteers are using their own devices, their own tablets, even computers to actually do the point-in-time count. So we knew we needed a cross-platform solution. So immediately, iOS, Android, Windows 10. So there you go, Xamarin. And
you know what? That's an easy solution in a situation like this because CCH is already low on, oh, you're low on budget? Let's go ahead and buy a unique device for every volunteer. That's not even an option.
That didn't even enter into the conversation.
Yeah, and the thing is, what I learned also is that the recruitment of the volunteers is something that's ongoing. It's not like the list was known ahead of time. There's many volunteers that came on board in the last few weeks or even the last few days before the count. So there was also a training factor, making sure that we built a solution that's really intuitive, something that just like a normal app you download from the store where you download it, you install it, and then immediately you should be able to get going without getting a week of training on it. So creating something intuitive was important. And then there was the age-old issue. I mean, I'm sure you've seen this before. Hey, we have this paper form, and we want to turn it into an app. And now you look at the form, and you go, whoa, okay, No, it's not that it was bad. It's just there's a lot of questions on it. We're talking about a total of 35-ish questions, but they're not asking every question. It's also a dynamic flow. So we had to create an application that would get the questionnaire dynamically, and then after that, present each question kind of like wizard style, like walking the volunteers through the questions. And then depending on one answer, knowing which question to show next. So, of course, if a homeless person, you know, we asked about their gender, they can refuse on a lot of questions. But if they say, hey, they're male, we're not going to ask them later if they're pregnant, you know. So it's, there's a lot of, this is an easy one, but there's also other questions that are a little more complicated. Based on this, we go there. So it's kind of a dynamic flow. And we don't want to have to train the volunteers to say, if they answer this, don't ask them this one. We want to make sure that we're just not going to show it at all in the solution.
Yeah. So yeah. Now, obviously, I'm leading you into this, Nick, but now, you know, Xamarin Forms is a relatively uniform approach to something. You know, they you create a Xamarin Forms app, I create a Xamarin Forms app. They're going to have a similarity visually, but what you're talking about seems pretty custom. Can you customize a Xamarin Forms solutions UI this much?
Yeah, actually, it's one of the challenges. I mean, if there's one message that I've been telling for years is that in all things, especially in mobility, there is no silver bullet. I'm not going to be one of those Microsoft guys that shows up and say like, yeah, Xamarin's perfect for everything. Yeah, you can do everything in Xamarin. The question is, even within the Xamarin world, there's the classic UI custom, there's the Xamarin Forms approach. And here, it was a no-brainer. We had to use Forms because there was just no time to create a custom UI for each of the three. The advantage we had is this is not an app that was going to go in a store. This was deployed, provisioned directly to the volunteers. We can talk about the DevOps side later. But the bottom line is, it's not like we had to provide like an experience that was like perfectly married to iOS, to Android, and to Windows. If for fear that people, you know, if we use an approach like Xamarin Forms, that they might say like, you know what, the UI is kind of a little too like bland or generic. We actually spent a lot of time tweaking it and making sure that it was very responsive, that it works well.
Yeah.
It works on phones, it works on tablets, but we ran into challenges. And a couple of those challenges I can give you is something as simple as there's a few questions that we're asking multiple choice answers. Yeah. So, for example, where did you sleep recently, or what are some of the main issues that you are facing, or what help do you need? It's not just one answer. Mm-hmm. You had to select multiple. Xamarin Forms doesn't have multi-select lists.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, we're all familiar with the list view in XAML, you and I, and this is great. Multi-select list, no problem, let's do it. Xamarin Forms, wait a second, that doesn't work like that. There's only single select list. So now we ended up crafting our own interface where, in fact, it was, you know, a scroll view of buttons that we would light up and turn off as we would select them. So it was perfect. A lot of like automated things that would get lit up this way to solve that problem. Something as simple as some of the answers, because, you know, it's a paper form, so some of the answers were like this long.
Yeah.
You put this on a small phone, then you realize, hey, we need a word wrap for this. But you look at, you put a button on there, and it turns out that Android automatically word wraps its buttons, but iOS and Windows 10 don't. So again, you realize, okay, what are we going to do with this? So now you have to start like customizing with like a specific content view. You can use custom renderers and effects. So all the schemes are there in Xamarin Forms. You're just not going to get them out of the box just like that. Like, hey, magically, everything is perfect and it works. You discover these things as you start doing testing. But the beauty is that we didn't have to change course. We always had like another tool from the Xamarin toolbox that we could pull on so that we could actually fix this.
Okay, got it. So I need a fast, simple, cross-platform solution. I can do Xamarin Forms, but don't fool yourself. There's still work to be done, depending on what your UI is. Okay, so Adam, I have a front end. I got Nick out there. He's typing XAML at the speed of light. I need some sort of back end to kind of describe what the back end looked like and how you manage that.
Well, we needed it to be something that was going to be easily accessible to the mobile devices. We decided to go with the Azure SQL database. We had a web API service that was written as an ASP.NET application. So the goal was to try and make it as simple for the client side to do its work as possible. So we had the database of the questions and answer choices, and then some of the other metadata, like which question to jump to, depending on the answers. You know, whether an answer had like a fill-in option as well as simply, you know, checking it off yes or no. Some other information, for example, whether the fill-in answer was going to be a date format or number format or text. So we had put that all together, came up with an object model that we could send to the mobile devices where they could get the survey data. We didn't want to have that hard-coded on there in case there were any last-minute changes or anything. You don't have to deploy new app update, obviously. So we came up with a JSON, a JavaScript document that we could send to the devices that was easy to parse, that had all the information they needed to present the survey information we had to the client, and included all the navigation data and other metadata that was necessary. And then we used a very similar information model to send it back to us afterwards, so we could parse that onto the server. Sure. And save in the database and make reporting nice and easy for Brian's people.
Nice and easy is right, and standard, right? You're not creating something exotic here. This is the way applications work, and it just turns out it's actually easy to do. And talk to me a little bit about data storage.
So on the devices themselves, we used a very similar format. The JSON format serializes very nicely, so they can save the survey response data in a model that's very similar to how it comes back from the server. And how it gets sent back once the answers are filled in. So we tried to keep it as consistent as possible so we wouldn't keep translating data from one model to another. Very similar structure that we'd send down could be saved on the device for offline use, or a lot of times where there's places in where the volunteers would be out taking the surveys, they might not have a very good cellular connection on that person's particular provider in that spot. So we want to make it really easy to persist the data locally on the device. And then when they get back into range again, Wi-Fi or cellular, whatever, have that data be able to sync back up to the server. On the server end, we had talked about a couple different options for how to store that, using like a document database to store the JSON directly, or use the SQL, table format instead, which we went with because that was very familiar to the people who do the reporting at CCEH. So by keeping that pretty consistent, they could, carry over a lot of their same reports or not have to modify them so much to use a different technology there.
Yeah. Well, and it never hurts to use the fastest database that man's ever seen. So that's handy too.
Definitely.
Omar, and here Adam, we are. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and Adam, also, you made use of Entity Framework as well to translate the JSON data back into relational, if I remember correctly.
That is correct. It is nice having some tools like that take a lot of the kind of the grunt work out of translating data back and forth between different formats and, persisting to the database. So Entity Framework, I think they had called it the Magic Unicorns project internally there for a while, and I can totally understand why, because doing database work with that is definitely saved a lot of time and made things simpler. So especially in a case like this where they call you up and say, we've got a couple weeks to get this whole thing done start to finish, then having something that that takes a lot of the busy work out of there is a huge advantage.
And on the client side, when you're talking about data, we also had like very special circumstances here, because typically you would have said like, hey, let's just put like SQLite on the client and then it works on all three platforms and we can store the data there and do some kind of sync. But it turns out that we never had to actually bring the data down. Like no volunteer would ever download another volunteer's survey data. The data only flows in one direction to the server. And for the sake of simplicity, we're realizing, the survey questionnaire is already coming to us as a JSON file. All the surveys that we're capturing is basically in an object structure we can easily serialize in JSON. So we decided, let's just store files on a device. That's it. So whenever you complete a survey, it was just a file that was in your application folder. So it's hidden. It's not something that's accessible to the user. But we decided to forego like all database technologies on the client, because the bottom line is it was not needed. We simply went with an approach where we store one survey is a JSON file. We accumulate them, we send it up to the server. Then after that, once we have a confirmation it was uploaded automatically and properly, we would even clean up the data because, there can be privacy concerns in keeping this data out there. So all volunteer devices were automatically cleaned of data after either a few days or after a successful upload. So this way, would not leave anything out in the field or respect everybody's privacy. And so it was, it worked out pretty well by keeping, sometimes you have to realize, you want to create like these fancy solutions and use like every cool database, but you realize, let's do this, let's do this the right way. Especially since here, like Omar mentioned, we had a team that was all volunteers and all part-time as well. there was not really anybody working like dedicated full-time on this. Yeah, in January, it turned into a little bit more of a full-time affair, but there were a couple of developers from Omar's team, Keith and Nyan, that actually helped us a lot, especially standing up the database and standing up the data model and setting up the VSTS infrastructure for the source code for the whole team. I also have to give props to another developer that helped us. I went through a personal life event that compromised my schedule in January, and January was kind of critical for this app. So half of my time went away, and we have Eric Rosell from our partner Catalyst team, also known as the TED team at Microsoft, that came in and just like hit the ground running in my code and basically helped bring this home. So it was a team effort, but again, in the spirit of the nonprofit here, everybody donated their time. Everybody was part-time. Everybody was volunteer. And also I have to give props to Adam because, yes, his boss basically donated his business hours, but Adam went above and beyond and was working way beyond business hours here, and he donated a lot of his own time. So everybody poured into this project, and it turned out great.
Omar, we've got this client project. We've got all this back-end stuff in a SQL server with data, and all of a sudden we start thinking of things around added business value, things like maybe Power BI sneak into the equation. What do you see when you see this? You're like, okay, now we can do something else. What do you see? Because you've got the trained eye to upsell everything, right?
Sure, sure. Well, I'd say, you know, we definitely, in talking to Brian, you know, one of the things that he had a request for was during the time that the 1 week when this is running, he thinks of it like a war room. He wants to be able to get instant access to the data that's being collected. The way he described it is he said, if someone starts to walk into Massachusetts, and you will see that on the GPS, I want to be able to call them and let them know, hey, go back to Connecticut. That's where we're looking for the homeless youth, just as an example. And actually, I don't know if this will come out, but I'll see if I can hold this up in a manner. Here's the actual app. And one of the things, when you click new survey, it actually goes and it's showing a profile here where it picks up the GPS location and stuff like that. And then when you go to start the survey, you know, it just asks very simple questions. And like Adam or like Nick described, the UI is very clean. And so you can go ahead and just pick something and then go next. And it's very malleable too. You see, when I pick the choice, now I can type in a specific age. So it's very flexible in how it works. And so the data collection, just like Nick and Adam were describing, just what the app needed, but then getting it all up into SQL gave us a chance to do more. And Keith on my team, Keith Anderson, really did the first model around Power BI, taking a look at the different data flows that were coming in, so we could go and pivot from by volunteer, because we had one of the tables was a volunteer table. We could say, show me all of the surveys that this volunteer did, or we could go and we had a map of Connecticut, and we could see where the different surveys were happening in the state of Connecticut, and there'd be a little dot each one, and you could click on the dot, and you could see exactly what were some of the survey answers coming back. So it gave a nice real-time view into what was happening for Brian's war room. So yeah, Power BI was very, it was, and the other thing is Keith wasn't an expert on Power BI when he picked it up. So it was one of those things where it was exciting to see how quickly you could get productive with that.
Yeah, that's nice. That's really nice. Now, Brian, I'm listening to all these nerds talking, and they're like, oh, it's so fast to write. Oh, it's so easy to use. The data's so available. Give us a reality check. You're standing back watching all of this happen. Is this for real?
So I'll first say that the folks who are actually doing the data collection out on the ground are not data collection experts. So we needed this app to be as user-friendly as it could possibly be for this to be successful. And what we did after the whole thing was over is we sent out a little survey to everybody who volunteered, and there were a couple questions on the functionality of the application, and I think there were about 98% positive coming back. It was one of the easier parts that we had going into this, because there was a lot of training around protocol of like what you do and how you ask questions and how you approach people. So once all of that was over with, the actual use of the application was extremely easy for everybody on the ground. And a lot of that had to do with the work that went in with Nick and everybody else in Microsoft, making sure that when the button lights up to the right color, it's pretty clear that that's what you've selected and that you can go to the next one. So it, yeah, it really worked out well for us.
The, you know, I love stories like this because not just the technology side. It's pretty cool. Microsoft has a story around building these solutions. They really are fast and la-di-da-di-da. That's really cool. And I have to say, a handful of years ago, the story wasn't as good as it is today. It's really beautiful that we can come to the table and say we've got a real solution and we're not kludging it. And but it's even cooler. Like, I think the people aspect is maybe neater here, right, where we're like, look, mm-hmm. we have all of this stuff. And, you know, there's a learning curve. You're going to have to figure some things out. We have both Adam and Nick, and we even have, you know, Keith coming in, and all of these things are like, look, I don't get a bonus for this. This is just the way it is. But because we kind of get inspired by guys like you, Brian, and I don't mean to, like, just point out you, but just people who, you know, here we are. I'm trying to inspire developers to be better developers, and you're trying to solve a real problem. And there's just something cool when we get to cross paths and be able to do the same thing together. If there's somebody watching this show and they're like, oh my gosh, Omar's right. This, I want to be part of this as well. Where could you send somebody who's looking for resources or a way of connecting with their own state's version of you?
So, well, in Connecticut, I'll send you directly to cch.org, which is where all of our point in time count and youth count reports are going to be up probably end of April, early May. But if you're looking for something in a state outside of Connecticut, there's the National Alliance on Homelessness, NAEH.org. We love acronyms in our world, as I'm sure you do in yours. So if you go to NAEH.
We never put four together. It's only three together for us.
Oh, I can have full conversations and acronyms in homelessness and housing right now. And there are even ones that have like an acronym nested within another acronym. It gets ridiculous. But back to the National Alliance, on their website, they'll be able to direct you to the other state's version of the Connecticut Coalition and Homelessness, because each state has a version of us out there. We do things a little bit different. We function a little bit differently, but every state has one.
All right. Brilliant. And tell me, so we've got a technology like this. You know, January is going to come around again. What do you see as far as like the future? Is a tool like this going to be used in a special way, a different way, something you can envision?
So I think there's going to be an expanded use of this definitely into the future. A lot of communities are somewhat hesitant to adopt new technology. There's a lot of people in our industry who've been doing things the same way for year after year after year. So when something new comes along, they're a little hesitant to adopt it. In a couple of months, there's the National Human Services Data Consortium meeting. It's an annual event where nonprofits get together and talk about like how they're using data and what they're doing. And we're going to be talking about our use of mobile technology for the point in time count. So cool. There's already been a lot of interest in that and just how we do it going forward, because it saved hundreds of hours of data entry time on our end. Mm-hmm. And I can't quantify the number of headaches that it saved me from all of the data entry and all of the error correcting that we would have to do. It was just, it made life so much easier. And I could see more and more states going the route of mobile tech. And this is a great example of how it worked.
Yeah, it's cool to lead the way. Omar, you know, man, thanks for just your desire to give and be part of your local community. That's the reason we even met these guys. That's the reason we're having this call in the first place,
right?
Is because of this kind of knee-jerk, let's search the database and see what we can find. And they just happen to have a great acronym that was really appealing to you. And here we are. Omar, right. Thanks for being on the show today.
This is a real Microsoft trait, though. I mean, it's not unique to me. I think really Microsoft, you know, we have this heritage of giving. But I'd also add one more, you know, place. If people are really motivated and say, hey, wow, this is great work, I want to do something, but maybe I don't have time right now to go build, you know, an app, because I think maybe Nick will talk a little bit about how we're open sourcing this. But I wanted to also say, if you just wanted to go and do something today, there's another great site, I'd say it's called Be Homeful, behomeful.org. And that's a way where if you just wanted to donate some money and keep people out of homelessness, it's a great way to go do that. And so that would be one more, you know, just immediate action that people could take. But of course, we'd love the developers on this show to to get inspired and maybe take the open source version of this and contribute back. And let's keep iterating on this and make it something that, you know, every state can go and adopt. And it's a great just general survey platform. It's just think about all the different surveys that we do every day. It could be pretty powerful.
It could be very powerful. That's exactly right. And you know what? Thank you for mentioning that too. The giving culture inside Microsoft, I'll be honest, when I joined Microsoft, I never expected to find that. And it's deep, it's real, and you know, it's not coerced. I mean, employees are the impetus for the whole thing. It makes me proud to work for Microsoft, I'll be honest just about that.
Right.
Adam, I can tell the work that you have done here is excellent. Thanks for being on the show and talking to us today.
Oh, thanks for having us. It was a fun project to be involved on, and obviously a worthy cause, so I was happy to be a part of it.
Yeah. Nick, you did it again, man. You did it again. So all this is open source, huh?
It's in the process of being open source, yes. When Omar brought us together and we met with Brian and we started kicking things off, that was one thing that I brought on, like, at the very beginning. I said, listen, there's 50 states out there. Connecticut is only one of them. You're really a pioneer and a leader here by adopting mobile technology like this, but surely this problem can be solved by replicating the technology across other states. So I immediately raised the question, like, would you be willing to open source this?
Yeah.
And Brian was like, yes, not a problem.
Why not?
So
yeah.
It's pretty much on my shoulders right now to finalize this, because I'm working with Brian and his team, and we're going to be posting this to GitHub. But the idea is the entire solution plus all of the assets required to rebuild the Azure infrastructure to support this solution, everything will be open source, documented, and made available to anyone that wants to either replicate this for another state. Or at the same time, you could fork this and say, hey, you know what, this is not going to be for homelessness, but anybody that wants to present like a dynamic questionnaire of some kind, they'll be able to fork this and adapt it. So I think the human story is amazing. And on top of that, the tech world just keeps on giving. And by open sourcing it, I think it's just a nice little bow on top of the whole solution. It's our gift to everyone out there.
Great way to say it. Omar, Adam, Nick, thanks, guys. Brian, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks.
And
you guys
just one last thank you to Microsoft and Nutmeg for all the work you guys put in. I know it was stressful a little bit towards the end there, but it came down to the wire and we got it all done. And I think we're going to be a stronger state for it. So thank you guys again for all the work you put in.
You're welcome.
Great.
Thanks,
guys.